So tonight in Sif Hei, we really turn our attention from the discussion of the foos to the discussion of the bishul. The siman had opened, and the sugya had opened. The top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph and the first couple of seifim Aleph Beis and Gimel had been focused on which foods are bishul akum susceptible. Now we're really switching from the chefza, which foods, to the question of, given that you have a food that's susceptible, but what qualifies as an act of bishul akum, as an act of bishul, as an act of bishul akum, that would create an iser on susceptible foods. And we pick up, and this next topic, the question of bishul, and we're going to begin with the kavanah tanachir of bishul, both because the Shulchan Aruch has been following the Seder HaGemara, and that is the next piece of Gemara. We're going to go from here to further down the Amud. We talk about more issues of Bishul in terms of Bishul Yisrael v'Nachri together. How much Jewish participation do you need to make it kosher? So that's going to be continuing the topic of Bishul, and it's going to be continuing our journey down Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. But we're also following Sif Hei, this question of Kavanas HaNachri Bishul also follows on the heels of Sif Dal that we were working on last week, which was a question of Shvachos. If you have actual Avadim or if you just have employees, does that still fall under the purview of Bishul Akum or not? As we saw last week, number one, that opens the question of the Maisa Bishul. It began to shift our focus from the food to the act of Bishul. And also, as you saw last week, Sif Dalet, Sif Gimel, and then Sif Dalet, the question of Tam Ke'ikr and the question of Avadim, those brought to the fore that major machlokas between the Rashba and the Ra'ah about the nature and of the Isser Bishul Akum. And Sif Gimel, in terms of the Tam Ke'ikr, was a machlokas Balei Atosos, whether or not Bishul Akum, the flavor of Bishul Akum is treif, like any other standard machalos asuras or not. And we saw that Rashi and the Ra'ah broadened that. They argue about that as well. These Gedolei Chachmei Svarad also argue about the question of, is there a concept of Tam Ke'ikr by Bishul Akum or not? And as we saw, the Rashba and the Ra'ah especially, really sort of expanded this into a much broader question of the nature of Bishul Akum. The Gemara is almost clear. The Gemara is clear that many of the Machali Akum are also because of Chasnus, Pas Akum, and Yein Akum. And most Rishonim assume that's true for Bishul Akum as well, as we discussed when we got started. Bishul Akum also, the Tam HaTakana, we assume is Mishum Chasnus. The Tam HaTakana is to avoid over-socialization between Jews and non-Jews. But the Machlokas, Rashba and Ra'ah, had been... That was a Tama Takana. But then, every time you have a Takana Jabban, there's always a rationale, there's always a purpose, there's always an objective, a problem you're trying to solve. But usually, Chazal will craft legislation, will craft regulations to address that problem. But once your regulation is live, once you have a Takana, so then the Tzuras HaTakana is independent of the Tama Takana. Usually you say, Loplug, and that's what the Rashba says, that Bishul Akum is like most other. That's true that the rationale, the driver, the initial motivation to create Isur Bishul Akum is to avoid chasnus. But what Chazal did in order to address chasnus was they created a classic Machalos Asuras. And that's why the Rashba says, like most Balei Atosos, that there is Tam Ke'ikr, the Blias of Bishul Akum into other food make that food treif. Blias of Bishul Akum into Kalim, those Kalim will require Hagala. And we're not going to start drawing fine lines and saying, well, this, beyond the question of Tam Ke'ikr, we're not going to start saying, well, this particular case of Bishul Akum, there's a little bit less of a concern, so this is Mutter. Whereas the Ra'ah says, no. Number one, there's no Tam Ke'ikr, there's no concern about Kalim. And the Ra'ah says, If a Nachri cooks for a Chol B'Shabbos, that's already highlighting the unique case, and it's highlighting Havdalah Bein Yisrael L'Akum, then we don't need to worry about Bishul Akum. Or we said if because of their employment status, however you understand Avadim, there's less of a concern. Rabbeinu Avraham and Tosa says, the Beis Yisrael, there's less of a concern. All of a sudden, the if the Tam doesn't apply, the Isser doesn't apply. So that was that big machlokas with many, many nafkaminas, whether the Geder Adin of the Geder Isser of Bishul Akum is independent of the Tam, say lo plug, like the Rashba, or no, it is not independent, and the Tam HaTakana is part and parcel, it's an integral part of defining the Isser in an ongoing way, the approach of the Ra'ah. And so that was Sifim Gimel and Dalet and Tazayin. And it even brings us to Sif Hei as well, at least by way of background, because in developing this idea that Bishul Akam is different than most Dinim D'Rabbanan, that Bishul Akam, we don't say Lo Plug, so the Ra'ah says, after all, there's a din of, Argamar, that Bishul Akam is only Usher if the Nachri had Kavana. Why? Why? It's not an active Bishul otherwise. It's an active Bishul. So he says, yeah. If there isn't Kavana, then there's less concern of Chasnas. If he isn't even aware of the fact that he's doing Bishul, so how much social cachet, how much social impact will that active Bishul have? That's a sort of interesting background and interesting connection in terms of the flow from Sifim Gimel and Dalet to where we're up to Sif Hei, as well as the fact, obviously, that Sif Hei is, it's a next Gemara. It's not clear that Ra'ah necessarily has nafkaminas. Keep our eyes open as we explore this dip. So let's take a look at the fascinating Gemara. And the Gemara sort of throws you for a loop a little bit, because at first the Gemara, the sugya opens with a case that seems like it's Bishul Akam, and then the Gemara backs out. So let's take a look inside. The Gemara had opened with a comment of Rav Baruna, one of the more obscure Talmidim of Rav, quotes his Rebbe, that you have a Nachri Hitzis as Ha'ur Ba'agam. There's some sort of a swampy area or a pond, and the Nachri lights a fire, presumably wants to drain the swamp. Not in the literal sense, a drain the swamp. I think you look at the Rambam, he assumes that the Nachri wasn't lighting the fire to drain the swamp, he was lighting the fire to burn off the brush. I think that's the language of the Rambam here. I'm not a swamp trainer. It's not my expertise, neither in the metaphorical sense nor the literal sense. It's very holy work. That was done in the late 1800s by the Chalutzim. They're draining swamps. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if fire is the way to go. So whatever it is, the Rambam says, "Goy shehitzes ur ba'gam kadei la'avir echatir." You do it in order to remove the brush. Be that as it may, so coming back here, so the Gemara says you have this Nachri who lights a fire. And then if it turns out that there were grasshoppers in the grass, that's what we expect to find them, and now they got toasted by the fire, so they're treif. So the Gemara initially thinks, well, what's the issue? So first the Gemara says, well, maybe it's a din d'oraisa. Lo yada hei tar hei tameh. I don't know, they got, there are simane. The Pesukim say that there are simanim to differentiate between kosher grasshoppers and non-kosher grasshoppers. Now all grasshoppers are kosher. So I need to be able to do a very fine inspection of the grasshoppers to be able to see all the simanim. So if it's a live grasshopper, or if it's dead but fresh, so I can see. But if it got toasted, so a lot of the evidence is gone. So Gemara says, well, maybe that's why it's Aser. It's a Suffolk Chag of Tameh. Then the Gemara says, well, why are we talking about a non-Jew? What does it matter who lit the fire? The fact that we said that it was specifically Ovid Kochavim Shitzor sounds like it's a Bishul Akam problem. Then the Gemara says it can't be a Bishul Akam problem because Rabbi Yochanan said, Hayakam Dacharech Reisha, Shor L'meich L'mineich L'meish Unei. You have a Nachri who took a bird or took an animal and wanted to remove the feathers or remove the hair from the head, so he held it to the fire. So Yochanan said, you hold it to the fire for a couple of seconds, it's not going to cook most of the meat, but it will cook the ear tips. So says, despite the fact that the Nachri held it to the fire just to defeather it, just to remove the hair, you're still allowed to eat the ear tips that did get done by the Nachri. So why? I have a Shri Bishalakam. So you see, it was Lavuri Seir Kamachaf, and if his Kavana was to remove the hair, not to cook the meat, so it's Mutter. He was doing it to reveal the agam, which again Ram understands means not to remove the liquid, to remove the brush. Either way, he wasn't. So the Gemara says, how could it be that Rav says that the chagavim are aser, but the Nachri, Rabbi Yochanan taught us that bishulakim is only aser if the Nachri has kavana. And the Gemara could have answered the machlokas Rabbi Yochanan. Could have said that, but apparently that was not the most likely understanding. And maybe the Amoraim, maybe later Amoraim had a tradition. There's no machlokas. For whatever reason, they chose not to interpret that as a machlokas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Instead, they said no. The truth is that Rav's psak was really all about Hilchas Chagavim. Rav's psak was really about the fact that once the grasshoppers are toasted, so I can no longer determine whether it's a Chag of Tar or Chag of Tameh. I can't check for all these simanim. I, Rav, said, gave a case specifically of Ovid Kochavim Shehitzis. So the Gemara says, this was not just given as a shir. This case was a record of a psak halacha about a particular case that Rav dealt with. That's what the Gemara seems implies. Maisa Shahayah Ovid Kochavim Shehitzis. When the case came up, it was the scenario that the actual scenario that was presented happened to be a scenario of a non-Jew had lit the fire. But if a Jew lit the fire, the din would be the same. It's not about bishulakim; it's about hilchas chagavim. Or if the fire started on its own, it doesn't really matter. If the chagavim got toasted before we had a chance to inspect them for siman hakashrus, so suffik dreis luchom, you're not allowed to eat them. The Gemara obviously is assuming it's sort of something worth filing away just for learning other Gemaras. The Gemara is willing to assume that even though Rav's comment sounds like it was given in a shir, but the Gemara is willing to assume that even though it sounds like it was given in a shir, it began as a psak halacha, it began as a tshuva to a particular shayla, and therefore the way it's phrased may reflect, you know, the specifics of that particular case, not something that's relevant for codifying the din. And then, okay, so the Gemara says that Rav's case is not about Bishalakam, but in telling me that Rav's case is not about Bishalakam, that Rav's Iser was about Hilchas Chagavim, in telling me that, the Gemara is telling me something important about Bishalakam. Because the Gemara is saying, that what's the Gemara telling me about Bishalakam? So now when the Gemara is telling me, what's the first thing the Gemara is telling me? What's the second thing the Gemara is telling me? So the first thing the Gemara is telling me is, we pass on like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan has this principle that the Isser Bishalakam is limited to a scenario where the Nachri had Kavanas Bishal. And the Gemara is assuming that is unanimous. The Gemara was not willing to say, oh, it's a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Rav. Even if he would have, usually the rule is that Machlokas Rav Yochanan Pasuk Rav Yochanan. The Gemara wasn't even open to making that suggestion. What would rather be Madchik that really just Maaser Shaya Kachaya? So we find Rav Yochanan to be incredibly compelling. And in fact, the Gemara goes on to have a gufa. We quote Rav Yochanan said, Ha'ach Undachavash Resha, etc., etc. And the Amora Ravina goes on to give an application. A Ravina is a much later Amora. Rav and Biochan, the first generation of Amoraim, they were Talmidim of Yehuda Anasi. Ravina is towards the end of the period of the Amoraim. So he comments, Biochan said this, that's how he passed. And so Hilkach, so therefore, in the second white line, here's another scenario. Akum deshada sichta latuna, covered by Yisrael, krom eikara, you have a non-Jew who threw a wooden peg into an atuna, into a kiln, and lights the fire in order to process the peg. Kavar by Yisrael kura me'ekara. The Jew had already previously left a vegetable, some sort of squash or gourd, in the, imagine acorn squash, butternut squash, an eggplant maybe, that sort of thing. It's sort of vegetable that's Bishul Akum sensitive, it's sort of vegetable that is not eaten raw, and it would be all Shulchan Lachem. So the Jew had already put his squash, you know, I stress acorn squash or butternut squash, zucchini is Nechel Chai. Zucchini is not a Bishul Akum problem, but people don't eat raw acorn squash. No one's eating raw pumpkins. That's not that. That's in Nechel Chai. And Hare, in Yonat Yoma, pumpkin definitely can be Ola Al Shulchan Lachem. According to all approaches, Ola Shulchan Lachem. President has a pumpkin on the table this week. So Mayan Yana. So the Jew left his pumpkin in the kiln, in the oven, and covered by the verb is fascinating. The Jew had already buried his pumpkin in the oven. In other words, it wasn't near La'ayin. He had stuck it in the back and figured eventually we'd turn on the fire. So my squash will gradually bake. And then the non-Jew comes along and lights the fire, throws his peg in and lights the fire. So Ravina says, Shapur Dami, it's mutter. Why is that mutter? It's Bishul Akum. So he answered, well, it's Rav Yechon. There's no kavanas Bishul. The Nachi wasn't interested in your pumpkin. He didn't even know you had a pumpkin there. You left the pumpkin there hours before. You covered it with something. He didn't even see your pumpkin. He just came to manufacture some tent pegs.
Who's you?
So the Gemara says, well, what's Ravina even adding? Just another case. No. I would have thought that he doesn't intend to cook your squash, but he does intend to cook his peg. That's what I was saying. So he does have kavanah special. So kamash malan the lesharuri manakamachavin. No, his intent is not to cook the peg. His intent is to harden the peg. And Rashi explains, well, what does this mean? Havi maskana. The Gemara says, "Kamash for Rashi says, ain bishul akelim. That's not called cooking. Don't cook pegs. You cook food. Okay. So what do we have? Let's just consider the Gemara. So the Gemara presents us with this memra of Rabbi Yochanan that the Isur bishul akum is limited not only to particular foods, but to an act of bishul that was done bechavanas bishul. And if the Nachri didn't have kavanas bishul, so then, even though he accomplished Bishul, that's not Bishul Akum. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. And the Gemara assumes that Rav most likely agreed as well. And therefore, we raise this other comment of Rav about the Nachri who lit a fire in a brush fire, and it turned out that he toasted grasshoppers. Rav said it's Aser. Often it sounds like it's Bishul Akum. The Gemara says, that can't be Bishul Akum. Because of Yechanan, that would be, from Bishul Akum perspective, that's mutter. There was no kavanah special. He was trying to burn the brush. He wasn't trying to toast the grasshoppers. He said, Aser, unrelated Hilchas Hagav. Fine. And then we have Ravina. Then we have Ravina, who applied it to another case, is where the Nachri's kavanah was to process, to produce this peg. I would have thought that's called Bishul. Kamashmal, that's not called Bishul. Okay, so what emerges from all this? So number one, I was saying before that from the discussion of Rav, we learned two things about even though the Gemara ends up saying Rav wasn't talking about Bishul Akum, that in truth, when Rav made that comment and he said Aser, he meant Aser because of a Safik Chag of Tamei, but we do learn two things. We do learn two things from this conversation. Number one, it reinforces the fact that the Shaklavatari about Rav makes it clear that we absolutely do accept Rabbi Yochanan. And there's something else also. If you take a look at the Rambam, Rambam quotes this. Rambam says, "Perik Yizayin Lach Yutes Goy Shebishul Vonus Kavin LeBishul Harei Zeh Mutter." Okay, so that's the Yisod of Rabbi Yochanan. And then the first example he gives is Rav's case, but the Mutter side. Assuming that I know those chagavim are kosher species, they are mutter. And then the Rambam adds, even in a place where toasted grasshoppers would be served at the royal table, mishum parperes. So Ram is adding, pointing out there's another important aspect here, which is that Chagavim are sort of taking us back to the opening Sifim. You see from the Gemara that Chagavim are Bishalakim susceptible. Okay. And the Rambam sees two points in terms of that. Number one, number two. One of the issues we had raised, thinking back a couple weeks ago, in the world of Ol Shel Chalachim, is does it have to be something specifically served on bread, al hapas, or it can even be leparperis? The Rambam explicitly says here, it's leparperis. Apparently, we don't eat Chagavim, the Rambam probably did. Apparently, Chagavim, by what I'm told from by my Temani friends, is it's not a main course. You don't have a grasshopper sandwich. They're tiny. They're like a snack or whatever. They're a side dish. They're something they...
Protein powder.
There you go. Interesting way of thinking about it. It's a kosher equivalent of seafood, sort of like seafood, like little pieces. I don't know. So the Rambam assumes, or he was more aware of the mitzias of grasshopper consumption, grasshopper cuisine, that if you're eating it, you're eating leparperis. So this is another indication that Ol Shel Chalachim includes something that's still leparperis. Doesn't have to only be the sort of thing that would be eaten on bread, or in our terminology, doesn't have to be a main. It can be something that's served as a side. So let's say something like taro chips, serve them as a main, but you would have them in the crudité, so that's already an Ol Shel Chalachim, Mishum Parperis, that's a problem. The other point the Rambam makes is b'makom. I feel b'makom shem Ol Shel Chalachim. So this is, we had mentioned this a couple weeks ago, this is one of the places where the Rambam says, as I mentioned, the Rambam says more than once, that explicitly, the Ol Shel Chalachim is not a fixed in stone. It's not etched in stone. It's going to vary by community, it's going to vary by century, it's going to vary by locations. But Osam Malkam Osam Zman. So one of the places the Rambam mentions that is, says Chagavim aren't always, again, apparently in some societies, Chagavim are street food. In other societies, chagavim are something elegant. So Rambam says, even, it may be the Rambam was bavarding this, because perhaps in the Rambam's time and place, which included several places, but whether it's about Spain or North Africa or Israel, the chagavim were cheap street food. So he's saying, but you should know, even in a place, it could be Bismana Zeram saying Chagav anyhow aren't Israel. But even in the days of the Amoron, apparently it was a concern. It was socially significant. Still, it's, and therefore, again, and therefore, if the Nachri toasted Chagavim with Kavanas Bishal, Ataka would be a Bishal Akam problem. But here it's Mutter because there's no Kavanas Bishal. So that's what emerges, those two points emerge from the beginning of the Gemara. The discussion about Rav. Number one, reinforcing that we pass on like Rabbi Yochanan. That Rabbi Yochanan is absolutely taken as a given. The Gemara does not even consider the possibility that Rav would have disagreed. Again, maybe because of the Masorah that Rav didn't disagree. But whatever it is, it's clear, reinforces the fact that we pass on like Rabbi Yochanan. And again, also the thinking about the fact that our Gemara is assuming that Chagavim are Bishul Akam sensitive. Bishul Akam susceptible, which means number one, leparperis is included, and number two, that even though there are times and places in which chagavim were not Ol Shel Chalachim, but if there are times and places when it is, that that's dispositive. You look by Osam Malkam Osam.
I have a question. Come on, I was just thinking about the Niskavim Levashel. Is it Niskavim Levashel food? Or if he was the Skaven Levashel, a food that is not susceptible to Bishul Akam,
he actually cooked
something that is susceptible to Bishul Akam, is that Kavan also?
Gevaldik.
Thing, or is it?
Gevaldik. Yeah. So there are three.
The Shulchan Aruch goes a step further, and he even says, as long as you're cooking anything.
Right. So let's begin to put this together. There are at least three different discussions we've shown have in the sugya. So let's unpack them one by one. The first speaks directly to this issue, like you're pointing out. That's the question of the peg, and the peg is interesting because, because you actually look at the Gemara on Shabbos, it's Tosis points out. Tosman, they look at the Gemara on Shabbos, you almost think you're in the twilight zone. The Gemara says everything backwards. The Gemara Masechah Shabbos, the last Tosa on the Yom, it sends you to Daf Ayin Dalet, Paraklal Gadol. Paraklal Gadol, that's what the Mishnah on Gimel, the second Mishnah Paraklal Gadol, in the seventh Parak, is the famous list of the Lama Tes Malachas. And then you have three or so blot of Gemara there. My Gimel Tayin Vav, the Gemara goes through some highlights of the Malachas. Obviously, much of the Masechta is about Malachas Shabbos. But the Gemara there takes you more or less al-Seder ha-Malachas. And the Gemara is a little bit to say, as Tosfos sends you to, Ayin Dalam Abayz, a little bit about Bishol. Most of the Sugyas of Bishol are earlier or later in the Masechta. The discussion that comes up in the seventh parak in Klal Gadol is, as Tosfos quotes, Haiman deshadei sichta latuna, is you're baking a peg. You put a peg, let's say a Jew. Our Gemara is talking about a non-Jew puts a peg in the oven, lights the fire. Is that kavan levash or not? The Gemara there is talking about a Jew does this on Shabbos. And let's say the fire is already lit. If he lights the fire, so that's a malacha of mavir. But either way, you have a fire, and the Jew takes a wooden peg and throws it in. So the Gemara says, you are chayiv. That is bishul. And the Gemara says, well, sure, why not? So the Gemara says, Mao de tema, it's not bishul, Mao de tema, it's sharure, kamash malon, levashule. Aval gavlu sharure, marakamachav, and mekamok, you're also mevashel. You're also mevashel. The Gemara says, I would have thought, sharure, kamash malon, levashule. So it's mamash, the exact opposite of our Gemara. Our Gemara said, havaminas, it's the bishul kamashva nul sharure. This isn't bishul, and therefore there's no kavanas bishul. The Gemara on Shabbos says you are chayiv because it is bishul. So how do two Gemaras fit together? So now Tosfos just presents us as, oh, I have a steer from a different Gemara, and here's my teretz. The Ritva points out that Tosfos, in giving his teretz, is arguing on Rashi. Tosfos's teretz. Take a look in Tosfos here. He says, Tosfos says, there's a difference between Shabbos and Bishalak. Well, how come over there we said it is Bishal? Over here we said Sharure. The answer is, your primary concern is, your primary focus is Sharure. Some Rishonim explain more than Tosfos. It's a two-step process, as you see in the sugya there. That you're trying to harden this. You have a wooden peg. It's fresh wood. It's moist, fresh wood. It's not the most sturdy. So you want to put it in the oven, and you'll dry it out, and it'll harden, and it'll be a tough, good, durable peg. So the Gemara says it's true. The end result is sharure. But your chayiv on Shabbos because it initially goes through a stage of softening. When you put it in the oven, at first it sort of softens and loosens, and the water escapes. And then, as it stays in longer, after the water escapes, it hardens. So the ultimate end goal is sharure, but there is a step of bishul. And the Gemara says, you're chayiv for that step of bishul. So how you understand, Tosfos says, but here we said, he's not mechaven lebishul. The Tosfos answer is, yeah, because Shabbos and Bishul Akim are different in their overall structure and context. What Tosfos seems to be driving at is by Shabbos, you can be chayiv if you did one act. And a second act, and a third act, and a fourth act, and one of them was Malach Shabbos, so you're chayiv. And if I went out to the backyard on a late spring day, maybe a summer day, and I on a Shabbos afternoon, I picked some tomatoes from the tomato plant in the backyard, and I bring it inside, and I dice it up, and I dress it, and I make a tomato salad. So the ikker wasn't the picking the tomatoes, the ikker was all the other things I did. But it doesn't matter. One of the many steps I did was a malacha, so I'm chayiv. The fact that I did other things afterwards doesn't take away. By Shabbos, I could look at each act independently. But Avishal, that Nachri lit the fire. Was that b'chavana levasha? Was that not b'chavana levasha? So Tosa says, now I have to, it's a unitary, I'm only going to pick one. I can't say, I did one act, another act, another act. This lighting of the fire, this act, is this with kavana levasha or not kavana levasha? He says, well, I'm mechavan for both. I'm lighting the fire so I can put the peg in, and then it will go through all these stages. So how do I define that? It's a little bit like a Rubik Akula type of situation. I have to make a call, I have to label this. Am I labeling this as kavana levasha or shol kavana for something else? So that's what he says. Inim b'shos Tosa says, by bishul akum lo chashiv, you have to intend to actually cook something. So if the Nachri put in a hot dog, so he wants to, hot dog's a bad example, it's already pre-cooked. But the Nachri put in a raw piece of meat, so he wants to cook that meat. That's kavana levashel. But here, your kavana in putting in the peg, is Nachri's kavana is basically to harden it. That's his desired end goal. Along the way, there's going to be a stage of Bishal, but that's not his focus. And so Tosa calls Bishal Garua. For Shabbos, it's enough that you, the fellow putting the peg in, he intends also that at a certain stage, there should be a temporary stage of Bishal. That's enough to be Chayav on Shabbos, but that's not enough. In the Shabbos context, that suffices. But in the Bishal Akum context, where I need to label the overall act of the Nachri, what was his kavana overall? His kavana overall was for the final stage of Sharurei, not for the intermediate stage of Bishal. That's what Tosa says.
He said the chiluk is more about defining the maisa versus defining the kavana.
What do you mean?
That in Bishal Akum, in Shabbos, so kavana, Malachas Machsheves tells us that as long as the maisa produced a certain result, and I had kavana to do this maisa, so it's going to be usur. Here, so really what I care about is not that I did an action that created something. That's Shabbos. Here I care about, did I want to cook something?
What was his vision?
Because the vision is critical when we're talking about chasnas or shema yachilenu, all that stuff really is more about kavana than it is about the formal maisa that you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the Ran, I think, says, the way the Ran formulates this idea of Tosas, he says, after all, by Shabbos, psik reisha is aser. Right? I don't really want to soften the peg, I want to harden the peg, but I know that along the way, here's what's going to happen. So that's chayev in Shabbos. But even though that's not, so something that I don't want at all, so it's a, here at least that's, you know. I'm trying to extract something, the process of extracting whatever I want is going to end up killing the animal from which I'm extracting. That's more or less psychration. I'm not really interested in killing the animal. I'll be glad for the animal to stay alive, but the process of extracting whatever piece I need, part of the animal I need, is going to end up killing the animal. So Hilcha Shabbos, that's a chiyuv. That's psikration, but that's not my kavan. That's I think the Ran is very much reflecting what you're saying. Now, so the Ritva, again, so Tosa just presents Akasha. I have a classic Tosa. I have a steer from a different sugya, and here's the answer. And the chiluk is, Shabbos is bishalakam. Shabbos, as you were saying, is more a question, just what are the maisim that I did? And also, a Shabbos, I don't have to choose between maisim. I could look at all of them. If any one of them was a malacha, I'm chayiv. Here, it's more about the kavana, but really focused on the kavana and the overall, ultimate kavana. What's the ultimate? What are you trying to get at? What was your vision? And I need to choose one. Okay. Now, the Ritva points out, this is flat against Rashi, because Rashi had very briefly said, Kamash Malan Dein Bishul B'Kelim. We mentioned that before in passing. At first it seemed very, very, very,
Do you think it's only Ein Bishul B'Kelim by Bishul Akum?
So that's the question. Rashi seemed very innocent before, right? Rashi said, Ein Bishul B'Kelim, okay, Kamash Malan. Right. Usually you don't even get that. Usually the Gemara has a Kamash Malan, you sometimes wonder. Sometimes the Gemara will say Kamash Malan XYZ. Often the Gemara won't tell you. Say Mao de Tema, the din should be this because of the Svara, Kamash Malan And often you're left wondering, what's the nature of Kamar Shmuel? Which Hanukkah is always you wonder about? The Gemara doesn't make it explicit. Which premise changed from the Hava Mina to the Maskan? Which assumption changed as a result of which the Din changes? So Rashi said it's there is no Bishul by Kalim. The problem is that's really against the Gemara. The Gemara says explicitly that you are Chayiv on Bishul. That cooking a wooden peg is Aser. So what do you mean Bishul? And the Gemara goes on to give other examples there of Bishul on non-food items. So how do you understand Rashi? So L'chor we have to say, and how would Rashi be Yashiv Tosis? I mean, the Ritva points out Rashi clearly understands this different than Tosis. Tosis says this is Bishul, just that's not his. That's not where his kavan is. It's true that there is such a thing as cooking a peg, but his kavana, Tosis understands, his kavana wasn't for the intermediate stage of Bishul, his kavana was for the final stage of Sharurit. But there is Bishul. Rashi says there is no Bishul. That seems like a direct contradiction to the Gemara in Shabbos. So L'chor, the answer is as follows. They are arguing, how would Rashi be Miyashit Krishna's Tosis? So L'chora, what would you say?
Saying it's only by because Kalim are not something that is eaten al Shulchan Malachim, so by Bishul Akum, Bishul B'Kalim. There's no such, it doesn't fit the categories of Bishul Akum because you can't, it's not something you would eat. So if it's just in here and Shabbos is Shabbos and here.
Yeah, and let's take that and sort of fit it into some of the categories of Hilchos Shabbos. It's a very, very beautiful Rambam. I think we may have come across this Rambam when we were learning, for those who were part of the Chabura for Bas B'Chalav. Yet another Erev Halacha where there's a concept of Bishul. And I think we may, the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, beginning Perek Tes, first six or so Halachas, a parak test of Hilchos Shabbos where the Rambam discusses the Din Daraisa of Malachas Bishul. Shechter and the Rabbi Willig both quote the Rav's comment. If you read the Rambam there, he's making it subtly but clearly making the point that there are three separate definitions of Bishul in Hilchos Shabbos. There's Bishul on food, and there's Bishul on water, and there's Bishul on non-food items. I think Ray touched on this a little bit earlier in Bishul Akum, when we were talking about Nechal Chai, the Rambam seems to understand the Machlokas, the Rav and some other Achronim against the Mishneh Berurah. Rambam, similarly in the Rambam, is that if something is edible raw, so it's not, Bishul doesn't apply to it, because neither in Hilchos Shabbos nor in Bishul Akum, because the definition of Bishul is making a food edible via heat, the machshir something lachila via heat. So the Rambam is that's why if you have something that's already cooked, you're going to recook it in bishul achar bishul. That's not called bishul. Or the Rambam seems to say if something is edible raw, sounds like he's saying if I take an apple and I bake it. Tosfos says beferish in the fourth parak of Masechta Shabbos that there is bishul on apples in Hilchos Shabbos. But the Rambam seems to say no. That since the apple is edible raw, if you take it and bake it, that's not bishul because it's already edible. Which of course then leads the Rambam into a problem, which is that as we discussed earlier in Bishul Akum, a prime example of something that's nechal kmo shu chai is water. And yet we have many references in Tanam and Amaram, Masechta Shabbos, to a problem of bishul on water. But what do you mean? But you're not being machshir the water l'achila. It is machshir l'achila. So that's probably what leads the Rambam to say, well, there's a different definition of bishul for water, and the truth is you find this in the language of the Tanan, chimun. By water, the definition of bishul is making it hot, raising it above yatzal esbo. Taking a piece of meat and raising yatzal esbo is not cooking. It has to get to machal ben drusai. We'll get to that soon in bishul akum. It has to become edible. But water, taking cool or warm water and making it hot, that's the definition of bishul on water. And then the Rambam goes on to say in al chavav, and there's a third definition of bishul. For food, the definition of bishul is making it edible. For water, the definition of bishul is chimum, is making it hot. And then for non-food items, it's taking something hard and softening it. And that's what the Gemara says over there. There's Dafayin Dal Masech HaShabbos. You took the wood and you softened it in the fire temporarily. That's Bishul. The Gemara goes on to talk about other materials, like let's say I have tar or pitch, zephes, and I put it over fire, warm it in fire, like you see what similar to what you'll sometimes see when the construction crews are melting the asphalt, whatever they're working with there. So that's an act of Bishul. The Rambam, the Gram talks about melting wax. The Rambam happens to have a chiddush, not for now, that the reverse is true as well. That if I took something soft and hardened it with heat, that would also be a Bishul. It's a difficult sheet of the Rambam, difficult specific cause of that Gemara of the peg. But be that as it may, the Rambam makes it clear that there are three separate definitions of Bishul. There's Bishul on foods, which is Hechsher L'Achila, there's Bishul on water, which is Chimum, and there's Bishul on non-food items, which is softening. So in Hilchos Shabbos, all three are fall under the rubric of Bishul, and that's the whole point of the Sukkah and Daf Ayin Dalam and Beis, is Bishul on non-food items. But as you're pointing out, Rashi is probably saying, but in Bishul Akum ain't Bishul B'Kelim. We have a different definition of Bishul, Rashi is saying, in the context of Bishul Akum as opposed to in the context of Bishul B'Shabbos. That happens to be, it's worth holding on to that. There's a larger point here also, which Rashi and Tosas, it turns out, are then arguing over a larger question, which is, to what extent does Bishul have the same definition in all areas of halacha? We have Bishul by Shabbos, we have Bishul by Basa B'chol, we have Bishul by Bishul Akum, we have Bishul by Karban Pesach. So is there the same concept of Bishul in all contexts, or is the definition going to vary from context to context? That may well be the machlokas Rashi Tosas.
I was just wondering if Rashi here, if the Ritva feels that Rashi here is saying that the reason this doesn't apply is because there's not even this object can't be under the royal rules of Bishul Akum, while Tosas is saying it all has to do with the Kavana part, that it would have applied. But the Kavanah is the problem.
Look at the next Rashi.
It's about Kavanah, but the point is, but in terms of definition of Bishul, Tosas is making the assumption that if softening a peg is called Bishul in the Hilchos Shabbos context, it's also called Bishul in Bishul Akum context, and therefore, well, why don't we call it Kavanah Bishul? The answer is, well, that is a Bishul, but it's a Bishul Daruah.
Well, but it still could be that the reason why that Hilah sense is because you're talking about fundamentally different, right, drivers of how to define Bishul.
What do you mean?
Which is what the later Rishonim start to do. I mean, like what we were saying before, that the reason why, right, we care in Bishul Akum, Achis Gav in the Bishul Gamur, is because it's only with Bishul Gamur that there is a concern about Chasmas. I mean, the whole Gezeirah.
Yeah, but Rash, unless you want to say that. You could alternatively say Rashi really means what Tosas meant also, but the simple reading of Rashi is not, the guy isn't really thinking about the Bishul of the Kli. Rashi makes sound like there is no concept of Bishul isn't irrelevant. That's not called Bishul. Ain't Bishul B'Kelim. Not his Kavana isn't for the Bishul of the Kli.
Right, but at least in this context.
What do you mean?
Meaning. You could still say that Rashi is just talking in Bishul B'Kelim in the context of we've been talking in this whole Gemara.
Maybe. But in other words, let's say a Nachri lights a fire. Let's say a Nachri lights a fire to melt wax. This is going to be Nachri Mila Halach L'maisa. The Nachri lit the fire to melt wax. It happens to be I had already left Kava Bakra Me'ekar. I left my eggplant in there. The Nachri comes along, doesn't know my eggplant is there, and he lights up the furnace because he wants to melt his wax. They're going to do a project with crayons, so they're going to melt crayons and do something like that. So that is Bishul in Shabbos context. And his Kavana is melting the wax, not doing anything else. By the peg, the Kavana is the ultimate goal. No, he wants to melt the wax. So Tosfos would say, what would Tosfos say? Is that a bishop? Is that kavanah bishul? Yeah, sure. Rashi, it sounds like, would say, no, that's not bishul. Again, you say, because Hilchos Shavuos will call that bishul. But our definition of bishul, by Yibishul Akam, a kavanah bishul, is specifically food and maybe water, but not non-food items.
How do you read the following Rashi? The Rashi, the Sharuri money, he adds in, if it's just in Bishul Chilin, he doesn't need to throw in those three words, but in Da'at Levishul. Why is he throwing those three words? He's clearly saying that we're still dealing with Da'as here, or Chavana.
You want to say that Rashi sounds Tosfos dick. There is Bishul, but that's not his Kavanah. Maybe, or...
There's no such thing as
Bishul. Right. That's not called Bishul. He doesn't intend to cook any food. But then he wants to do is harden a peg.
But then even if Da'at Hele Bishul, if there's no Bishul...
That's what he means.
Butler Da'ato, you know?
Maybe that's what he...
Why is it significant that in Da'at Hele Bishul? Why is that significant?
No,
it's an objective rule.
No, but that's what... That does go back to the whole Gemara. As he's saying... Wrapping up, the fact it's true that the Nachri cooked your eggplant for you. I would have said that's Bishul Akum, but he had no Kavanah's Bishul. He didn't intend for your eggplant. He intended for his peg. Because. And there's no Bishul in the peg. Again, you could maybe be Matrik and say, no, really Rashi means what Tosfos means also. Maybe against the Ritva. Ritva didn't think so. But maybe. If you assume like the Ritva, and I think certainly it's, the Dimas will come out from it sounds like that. That he's saying that this isn't Bigidrei Bishul. So then Luchora, again inspired by the categories of thought the Rambam gives us, we'd say, look, Shabbos has a very broad definition of Bishul. And it's a breadth which, by the way, is irrelevant in most other contexts. It's not going to come up in the context of Bishul by Karban Pesach or Bishul by Basar B'Chalav, because there we already have defined objects. But by Shabbos and by Bishul Akum, well, again, the actual Bishul Akum, it has to be food. You're not going to say it's usher to use a crayon that you can't eat a crayon that the Nachri cooked. That's irrelevant. But here's this one case where we're defining Bishul more broadly. Look at Kavan Levashul, anything, but how broadly we're defining Bishul in terms of the Kavanos HaNachri.
What's the svar behind this altogether? It's like a low quote type of thing? I mean, the Nachri doesn't know that anything's there. Even if he had Kavanah to be Mevashel food. But he,
yeah, that is interesting. And that's actually point number two. I said before the three discussions we've shown him have here. Point number two is the Rashba in the Torah Zabayis. And the Ritva, here in Avodah Zarah, quotes him, says, however we're limiting Kavan al-Vashel, either like Rashi or like Tosfos, that it has to be that your end goal is some sort of bishul, or it has to be bishul of food in particular, food or drink, not non-food items. But the Rashba points out, but what you'd also see from the Gemara is that he doesn't have to have Kavanah for your bishul. In other words, The Gemara didn't say, in both of the scenarios, not Rabbi Yochanan's scenario, but it was specifically Ravina's scenario, and maybe Rav's also, he's mechavein lebishul, but not of something else, and ends up cooking your item also, that is problematic. Bishul Hayaseid is not called Bishul, either because it's not really his goal, he's not really focused on Bishul Hayaseid, focused on the subsequent Chizuk, or because we don't, in the Bishul Akam context, we don't call Bishul Hayaseid Bishul. But if Yitaka was, if he put a stake in, he lit up the fire, he turned on the fire for, you had left, let's say you had a grill, and you had left a potato, you have a fire pit, and you had left a potato wrapped in foil, double wrapped in foil, no kosher issues, and no blias issues. You left the potato down deep in the coal, deep in the wood, and you didn't light it. And the nacher comes along, lights a fire, and lights the coals, and puts his steak on to grill. So that is a bishul akum problem, even though what? Even though he's mechavim l'shum bishul, that's what the Rashba says. You see, even the Gemara, he doesn't have to be mechavim for your item. This is mechavim l'shum bishul. It's interesting that you're talking about svara and lo plug. Right? The Rashba is the proponent of lo plug. Now, I don't think the Ra'ah disagrees, though. We don't have any reference, we don't have any record of the Ra'ah disagreeing. And frankly, it's hard to see how you would. The Gemara is pretty clear that if he's mechavin for any bishul, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. Ovi kachav mishabishul on skavin lebishul mutter. Ketzad. Starts by quoting the Rambam. The Lahavar Sachatzir. He lit the fire to burn off the brush. But the Chagavim get toaster elu mutar. Even if it's b'mach b'sha'olim shulchan lach. Or char harosh lahavar aseir. The other, the Rabbi Yochanan's case. You're scorching the head to remove the hair, you're allowed to eat the Rosh Hashanah, because that wasn't his kavanah. In kivein l'shem bishul, if he had intent for some bishul or another, hisak atan l'bashavo, he lit the fire, he lit up the oven in order to cook. V'hayva basar t'chila, the Jew had already left meat there from beforehand, v'nitzla, and ends up getting roasted. Al pishol kivein l'zeh basar, he didn't intend for this basar. He didn't even know the meat was there. It's still awesome. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes this comment of the Rashba and the Ritva. So that is the din. Maybe it is a degree of low plug.
Well, why should any kavanah matter according to the Rashba? If it's really low plug, why should kavanah factor in at all?
Yes, I don't know. So it's interesting, right? The Ra'ah had. The Ra'ah had had marshaled this din as a raya. You see that the din is limited. I'm not sure. I would say though the following: the Rashba and the Ra'ah are not min hakatza la hakatza. It's a matter of degree, by which I mean the following. It's true that the most dinim drabanan are below pluk. The Ra'ah thinks that this one maybe is not, but the Ra'ah, it's true that in general, Rashba and Ra'ah both agree that usually most dinim drabanan certainly are low pluk. But what does that mean? It's also true that dinim drabanan always have a motivating concern. That's why the Gemara says. Just came across it today in the morning in Mesachas Gittin Daf Hey, but appears several places in the Shas. Muslo shchichlo gazer be'arban. You don't Chazal aren't going to make a din drabanan unless there's sufficient cause. There's a significant concern, a common concern, and this din drabanan. If we make this din drabanan, we introduce this new regulation, it will make significant impact on that concern. So it's a milso de shchicha, and that's why the Gemara's first question. About a din drabanan is my taima. Right here. Again, learning getting yeshiva in the morning. So it's the opening, the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Masechta opens the din drabanan fine nechtam. The Gemara's first question is, my taima. You have a din drabanan. Well, based on what? The same way with the din daraisa, often start with a minhag hamili. It happens to be in the bishul akum sugya, we start with the minhag hamili because initially we thought that they were the din daraisa. So the opening question is, what's the source in terms of psukim? When the Gemara rejected that, If your starting assumption is a din daraisa, a din drabanan, so then your opening question will be, what's the source in terms of the source is not a pasuk. The source of din drabanan is the concern, the tama takana that drove it. So everyone agrees, the Rashba agrees, everyone agrees that din drabanan have ta'amim. There's a tzorech, there's a problem that drove Chazal to seek a solution. And when Chazal craft a din drabanan, obviously they're not just making a random din drabanan, they're trying to craft something that's going to pretty effectively plug this hole, address this problem. But at the same time, when Chazal craft, when they actually get down to the Tzuras HaTakana, the Gidrei HaDin, what actually is the Din Drabban that we're creating, so it's not going to exactly be contoured to when there's a concern, so then it's also, when it's not concerned, then it's mutter. Why? So that's where the concept of loplug comes in. That you need, well, clearly, sharply defined categories. I can't just say, well, it's us to do this if you think it's going to lead to chas. That's not going to work. It's not going to work because ani ekar v'lo ata, and everyone's going to say, oh, I think it, for me it's not so, I'm not going to fall into chas, so for me it's muta. It's sort of that active chip away. And then there's a passive chip away, and that's actually what Rashi in Gittin Tezayin Bey says, and talking about at the beginning of the second paragraph, talking about loplug, says, you need to have well-defined and consistently enforced Din Drabanan. Otherwise, we all know, and when you have institution that's well-defined, clearly defined and consistently enforced rules, those tend to last. When you have an institution whose culture is the rules are not well-defined and rules are not consistently enforced, then that leads to Hefker. So it leads to be passive chip away. Agav, there's a third layer perhaps. The Shechter is fond of a comment of the Mishnas Yaakov of Karlin, the brother of the Karen Ora, Talmud of Chaim Velazhin, in the 1800s. See, he develops the idea that in addition to the practical considerations of why you want Din Drabban to be below plug, it has to be, even though there's a Tom that's driving it, but there needs to be what you actually create as a well-defined and independently defined Din Drabbanan. He says, besides the practical rationales, that otherwise it didn't won't be durable, he says, he thinks it's like, it's exeris akasav. He says, by dinam deraisa you have such a rule, that lo dashin in tam dekra. There are reasons for dinam deraisa, but the din, once the din deraisa exists, it lives independently of its tam. So the Mishkan's Yaakov thinks, kol tikkun rabbanan kein deraisa tikkun. When Chazal make Din Drabban, also lo dashin in time of the, not time of the Kra, lo dashin in time of the Gzera. Okay, so whether it's sort of like a Gzera Sakasav, or it's a practical consideration, or a blend of the two, or maybe those ideas in themselves interact. Whatever it is, Lamasa, we have a principle of lo plug. Again, lo plug means that yes, Chazal crafts a Din Drabban to fit a concern, but it won't fit exactly. We need sharp, clear categories. We also often want to have ke'endar isa categories. So the we'll try to fit constrained by whatever our design constraints are, that we need well-defined categories. We'll try to find the best fit for the original concern. But it's not going to be an exact fit. You're going to have a square gzeir drabana that's covering, doing its best job to cover a circular hole. So it'll be pretty good. It'll fit well. But yeah, there will be cases where the din applies even though there's no concern, and there will be cases of concern that don't get covered by the din. But those little slivers don't get covered. That was at that point saying Muslo Shrizal Gaz Rabban. We designed a din that covers most of the concern. Now the concern has been vastly reduced. Good. Chassus is possible even within a special Akam. Okay, but we've vastly reduced the concern. So that's why, even for the Rashba, now we come back to your questions. How would the Rashba understand the fact that there's that Chazal limited to Kavana? And by the way, the Rama had been clear, going back to the previous Sugya, that Ola Shulchan Malachim is all about, that's when there's a real concern of chassid. If not shulchan malachim, potato chips are unlikely to lead to chassid. But steak, salmon, grilled salmon, that's going to be more likely to lead to chassid. So yeah, you see Chazal designed around the Tam. Of course they designed around the Tam. That's always the case. But those are sharply defined categories. But the Rashba is saying, this is a din like any other din, like any other din drabanan, that's low plug, meaning we set up certain guidelines and parameters. One parameter is it's only if it's a food al shul halachim. Another parameter might be it's only if the nachri had kavan libishol. And those do reflect, you know, when is there a heightened concern of chassas, when there are less of concern of chassas. But once you set up those parameters, zehu. We're not going to start saying. So that may come back to the
opposite. So it's not an issue.
Is that if there's not kavanah, but then it's kind of like the shvachas hakenuyos lanu. It's just totally like outside of the realm of bishul hakam altogether. With the shvachos, it's because, you know, according to the Ramban, it's not Yisra, it's not a full goy. And here it's because it's not bishul at all.
Maybe.
We call it bishul.
But why did Chazal choose to say that it's only bishul hakam if the nachri had kavanas bishul? Why? So you could reject, it could be the Rashba would reject the Ra'a and say, no, just stop. You have to find some. So why would Chazal limit it? I don't know. Or you say, no, the Ra'a made a good point that the Rashba could accept that like the parameter of Ola Shulchan Lachem only, the parameter of Kavanah L'Bishul only also has to do with when there's no Kavanah L'Bishul at all, the Nachri isn't even dreaming of food, he's just doing something else, so there's a vastly reduced concern of chasnas. Now, Ayo, tell me, but why didn't we then just sort of chisel it down even more, say, not just he needs to have Kavanah L'Bishul, he has to have Kavanah for bishul of my food, maybe because that's already in terms of low plug, we need to have well sharply defined. It's cleaner and less fuzzy. Just to say, the nachri has to have kavana for bishul.
That makes sense if we look at it from the perspective of the chatzah that you're eating, right? Almost like a ma'isa shabbos type of thing. Meaning, if what you're eating, right, was cooked, you got benefit. Right? It was cooked by the non-Jew because you didn't cook it yourself. The non-Jew cooked it, right? So that gives it a shame of davar ha-nivshal yideyakum, which could even lead to chassid, because you're going to go back and put it in his oven again.
Okay, that's a good point.
But the more that you look at it that way, the harder it is to understand why his kavanah should matter at all. Meaning, if it's his fire, if he created the fire, regardless what his intention was, you still benefited from his fire.
Unless you say that
you go one way or another.
But the point is that it's not an issue of chassos. I mean, the reason that it's mother without kavana is not because it won't lead to chassos. That's not the heter. The heter is it's not a maisa bishul,
right?
Because he doesn't have intent to do bishul. That's not a maisa bishul. It's not a maisa bishul. It doesn't fall into bishul akum. And it has nothing to do with whether it'll lead to chassos.
Right. I thought that it was like the heter, like when they talk about like showering on Yom Tov, right? So there's a question about the balanim, and so the people that think that showering is okay say that concern is not an issue because, right, showering at home is a completely, like the way we shower now, it's not a merchatz at all. It's like totally different scenario.
New case.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people disagree with that, but
right.
Sometimes, right, if it's a totally different context, you can't.
So what would you say about a factory assembly line based on that?
Right, that's I was thinking a lot.
Pushing a button.
Right.
Machaving to push a button.
Yeah, so I want to wrap up. I want to be sensitive to time. So I think there's a third discussion about the riff. There's a difficult riff. Maybe we'll put to the side for now. But I want to wrap this up by talking about where does this actually come up? Lamaisa. Seems very, none of us keep gardens with the grasshoppers, nor would we eat the grasshoppers even if we did keep such gardens. And few of us leave potatoes wrapped in foil in a non-Jew's grill, which he would later fire up. Here's a practical scenario. The electricity in my, let's imagine the electricity in someone's house goes out on Friday afternoon. Right? Forces are Friday. Right? It's more likely to happen on Friday afternoon than any other time. Alternatively, it's a perceptual bias. If it happens on a Monday, it doesn't stand out in my mind as much. The time that happened on Erev Shabbos, that was the most stressful. Imagine that scenario, right? You'll see in a moment why I'm giving the stressful case of Erev Shabbos. So the electricity goes out. You got to get this fixed, and you got to get this fixed quick. And you're not calling a Jewish electrician because he's not going to show up an hour before Shabbos. He's jumping into the shower. You get a non-Jewish electrician. So you're thinking about the Hilchah Shabbos concerns. I want to make sure that he's not doing Malachim on Shabbos. He explained to you, this is really important, but you know, I really need you out of here by 5:17, by 7, you know, 7:29, whatever the Zman is. And so let's put aside the Hilchah Shabbos issue. Let's say, to the Hilchah Shabbos, everything landed well. He came on time, and he was in and out, it was all done. The job is done before Shabbos. Come on. So now you think you're in the clear. Everything's good. The next morning, you walk into the kitchen, getting ready for the Shabbos day Suda, and you realize when the Nachri and the electrician restored the power in your house, so he turned, in doing that, he turned on all the lights. He, depending on the season and the technology of your house, he may have turned the air conditioner back on, or he may have turned the heat back on. All the appliances in the house started working again when he got the juice flowing. Because it was a Friday afternoon, there's something else which got turned on by the Nachri's act of, which is the Chompa. And we'll get in the next time, we'll get, we'll begin to get to the question of Jewish and non-Jew participation and Macha ben Drusai, but let's imagine it was raw. It was raw when the power went down, and he did the bishul. The meat in the chomp was absolutely not Macha ben Drusai. It was inedible, and he.
It was raw enough for not to be on the Shabbos issue.
Okay, right. Or it went on before Shabbos, yes. But it would, raw would be a Hilchah Shabbos issue. That's mamish kidra chaisas even. That's even more raw than merely not Macha ben Drusai. But yes. What?
It was raw cutting.
Correct. But be that as it may, I have a Bishul Akum problem. Because I have a piece of raw meat. If this is walking more al shulchan lachem than chant, perhaps. Lamaisa, I have raw meat that was cooked by the Nachri. The Nachri turned on the power. He flipped the switch, essentially, in the basement. But it doesn't matter. He flipped the switch, and he cooked the chalent. And this isn't the Nachri did Bishul on Shabbos with Tzarech Cholish or Avi Mekel. No. This has nothing to do with Tzarech. This is a heter and Amir of Amir Lach of Tzarech Cholish. The Nachri did the Bishul before Shabbos. Nothing to do with that Tzarech Cholish. So the chalent's treif. Chalent's treif. Is a chalent treif. What would you say?
Oh.
Right. So this is a class. This seems like.
But you could even take a step further, because that case, he didn't even know, he had no intention even to put the oven on. But what would happen if your housekeeper on Friday afternoon turns on the oven so that you could then put your food in later on to warm it up? I get home from work at 3 o'clock. I want my oven warm so I can get my food in hot. Put it in an hour before Shabbos.
Yeah, so we're talking
about if she's not cooking any food.
Good. So we'll get to
another step.
We're not ready for this yet. We'll get to in the upcoming Se'ifim, in terms of Jewish participation when Jews and non-Jews work together on Bishul. So if the non-Jew lights the fire and then the Jew puts the food on the fire, that's called Bishul Yisrael. If I had left the food in the oven from beforehand, and then the Nachri comes by, doesn't know the food is there, and lights the fire. So that's where you get into this question of, was he Mechavan Lebishel or not? I guess another example that's more dated is people of my grandparents' generation, leaving aside the safety issue, people of my grandparents' generation, our grandparents' generation, would sometimes heat up the house by turning on the oven and leaving it open. It strikes me as incredibly inefficient. I never understood. I saw it. I never understood it. Whatever. Okay. I guess it did work eventually. You would think there are better ways of getting the job done. But that would be an example of the Nachri comes by and opens the oven door and turns it on to warm up the house, not even realizing that the Jew had previously left something in the back of the oven wrapped up in the corner, invisibly. And so that's one example of, you know.
You go camping, and the guy is the one who makes the campfire. And then you take your hamburgers and you start cooking.
Again, if the Nachri makes a fire and the Jew puts the food on, that's Heter Gomer, because that's Bishul Yisrael. The concern, the case of the Gemara, is the food's already there. So when the Nachri, if a Jew puts food on a cold stove, that's not Bishul. If you put, and that's the Mishnayos and
what if
Bryce's
he were
and
to
Beitza.
Cook his own hamburger first? He made the fire and he cooked his own hamburger first, right?
And the Jew's food is already sitting there.
Yeah.
So that's Kavana L'Shem Bishul,
right,
some other
right.
Bishul,
right.
And that is a problem. It's only Gei Mutter if his Kavana was just the heating the kitchen, or just turning on the lights and the air conditioner, and et cetera, et cetera. He didn't even know, the electrician knows that you have a, he knows you have a chalampot. Why does he know about chalampot?
How is it different than if you have something in the oven and you tell your housekeeper, turn on the oven, I'm gonna be home soon and I need to warm something up. There's already something in there, and then you're gonna turn.
So
then you can put something else in there later.
So that's bishalakim. Because
you're machaving to bishul in concept, but you're not machaving to this particular bishul. She doesn't even know there's a potato in there.
Correct.
She's turning on the oven for future bishul use.
Right. So that's exactly this case. Right. The Nachri lights a fire in order to throw a sichta in. So this case is mutter because sichta isn't called bishul in the context of bishul akim, even because of Rashba, because of Tosis. But if the Nachri had lit the fire, that's what the Rashba says. If the Nachri had lit the Rashba's dig, if the Nachri lit the fire in order to throw his piece of meat in, in order to throw his potato in,
the Nachri's food doesn't have to be in first.
Well,
the Nachri's food
doesn't have to be in. The Nachri could be putting his food in later.
When you're lighting the fire.
Right, correct. He lit the fire in order to use the fire for an act of bishul, not realizing
exactly.
That he's also thereby being vashel your item. So, as Eric is stressing, if you only put your food in later, it's irrelevant because that's bishul Yisrael. But if your food was already in the fire, in the cold fire pit, in the cold stove, and the Nachri lit that fire in order to subsequently do his bishul, but in so doing, unbeknownst to him, did your bishul, that's a problem. So if the Nachri turns on the juice in the house because he wants to turn on the lights, because he wants to turn on the air conditioner, not unaware of the fact that he's thereby also turning on the chalampot, that's mutter. The Nachri lights the stove in order to heat the kitchen, unaware that he's also cooking the piece of salmon that's wrapped and sitting in the back of the oven for some reason. So that's mutter, because he has no kavanah l'shem bishul whatsoever. He had kavanah to heat the house. He had kavanah to turn on lights. But if he had kavanah l'shem, some bishul or another, then it would be problematic. So that's most of the discussion that surrounds it. Hey, Mitchem, going forward, we're going to probably spend a couple of weeks on Se'ifim Vav and Zion and Ches and Tes and Yud, perhaps also. The upcoming Se'ifim are the question of Jewish participation. What does a Jew have to do in order to make a mutter? What do you do when you walk into the kitchen? L'chadchila, what do you need to do in order to make a mutter? B'diavad, you walk into the kitchen and Nachri, and there's food on the fire that Nachri put there with the best of intentions. What should you and should you not do in order to save situations? A lot of do's and don'ts. Very, very fascinating. It's very rich in terms of the Gemara. There are multiple pieces to the sugya. The fascinating machlokes, a lot of fascinating. We're going to come back to Rashba Ra'ah again. It's going to come up again in this context. There's also a very fascinating read that the Rambam seems to have on the sugya. The lines we could probably spend 2-3 weeks. And these are a lot of the most common shilas, are these most relevant shilas, are these questions of Jewish participation. It'll probably be the next 2-3 weeks we'll spend on this, the next chunk of Gemara, and the next couple of Sefer Shulchan Aruch. Shkayach.